Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking on what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, March 22nd, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, the same crew that brought you the wonderful Hoopstravaganza podcast, the beginning of basketball season. We've got Bobby Colovi.
It's time to go to flipping work.
And Kyle Maestri.
I have nothing to follow that.
Bobby really scared me there. I was afraid we're going to have a profanity within the first 35 seconds of the show, but we don't. So we're going to be talking about basketball this show. If you're looking for spring practice updates, check back Friday for what will surely be an eventful show, just judging by who we're going to have on it. But we're going to talk basketball here, wrap up the Florida basketball season, talk about the NCAA tournament, some March Madness, give out our weekly awards at the end of the year. But anyway, the Florida basketball season is over. I'm relieved of my tour of duty for now. Florida lost 99-92 in double overtime to BYU out in Oklahoma City. A really great game, but Florida's flaws, you know, season-long flaws kind of exposed themselves. Their absolute lack of depth in the backcourt as Jimmer Fredette, favorite son of Utah, went off, scored 37 points, and Michael Lloyd Jr., averaging 4.6 points per game before that, went off and scored 26 on like 8 of 10 shooting. It was incredible. But Kyle, you wrote a column about sort of the backward depth and where Billy Donovan went wrong in coaching that game. You want to talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, watching the game, I just thought the first thing we should talk about, I think, is just Kenny Boynton and how well he played for the Gators. Not only carrying them offensively, scored 27 points, but really did everything he could on defense, had to guard Jimmer Fredette pretty much the entire game in man coverage. And then, you know, in my opinion, one of my biggest critiques of Billy for this game is he should not have had to guard Jimmer Fredette. Like you said, they have a limited amount of depth, so he wasn't able to get the rest he needed. And there was a point where they fell behind by 13 with about 9 minutes left in the second half, and he brought them back single-handedly, scored 14 points in a row. And while he was scoring 14 points in a row, he was guarding Jimmer Fredette every time down on the other end. And there was one point where you could literally see him. The ball was in play, and he was on the wing, hunched over, grabbing his shorts. Like, he was just gassed, and he needed to rest a little more. And in my opinion, Billy should have taken him off Jimmer, put Chipman in, let Kenny rest a little bit on defense, because offensively, he was their entire offense. Yeah. Nobody else was getting offense except for him. So I felt like he gassed him way too quickly. He also, in my opinion, helped foul him out, because the fifth foul that Kenny drew was on Jimmer in the second overtime. Obviously, as he's going to the hole, he's the most likely person on the court to draw a foul, except for maybe the big men, who Kenny obviously wouldn't be guarding anyway. So once your guy gets four fouls and he's been your best offensive player, at least move him over at that point. Like, he just had multiple chances to do the right thing and take him off, and it never happened. And then one of the most obvious criticisms would be the Gators had the ball, the last shot in both the regular period, normal period or regulation. I can't think of the word. Okay. And the first overtime period and got nothing. Got like bad looks. Kenny had to force a pass inside that got tipped. Like, I don't know. The whole sequence is bad. Billy did a really poor job drawing up a play that might work. So those would be the two biggest criticisms I had. But the players really played hard, did a really good job, gave everything they had. And they definitely didn't show up and, you know, just have a good time and leave.
They weren't just happy to be there.
Right.
I can remember in, you know, what, 4 or 5 years of really watching Gators basketball, that I can remember the Gators coming out of timeout or any kind of inbound play where I was like, wow, that was a really good inbound play. It seems they always just run around and then just
they
Hail Mary to the point guard, like, by half court. Yeah. Almost every time. So it really kind of is concerning that it seems that he cannot come up with a play that is going to get someone open.
Well, the one thing I feel like I learned this year is that Billy is a great motivator, a good recruiter who's had a couple of off years, and a bad in-game coach from what I've seen, especially this year.
But I don't know. I wouldn't call him, like, I wouldn't really say, like, they were off years. It's something, because it's not so much, every single one of these classes have been considered a good class, minus, like, one, like you know, the big star.
Yeah.
But, except for, you know, I guess even just 1 year, because Calathes and Kenny were both big stars. So it's just like a lot of the guys just aren't really, like, you know, producing once they get here. So I guess it's maybe even more on him that once he gets the players here, he's not getting them to, you know, getting them to their full potential. But, I mean, he's getting guys that are considered good. Like, even though everyone hates Dan Werner, for some reason, Rivals and Scout both had him as a four-star. I mean, Eloy Vargas was a four-star. He's gone, obviously. You know, a lot of the guys were considered good. They just haven't done anything.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what you said about the inbounds plays before are definitely right. I think Billy's really stubborn. I think, like, he's the exact opposite of, like, Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer might be stubborn, but for different reasons. But at least, like, he'll try to fit what's going on to who he has, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he'll try to fit the scheme to the personnel. And just Billy doesn't do that. It's like, this is my system. You're all going to learn to play it, or you can get out. And a lot of players get out because he just runs people off as a result. So that's the impression that I get, and it's really frustrating. I feel like adjustment is just not in his vocabulary. Mm-hmm. He's way too stubborn to make an in-game, like, change in game plan. And I think that really, really hurt him in this game. I just feel like the players literally tried everything they had to win that game, and the coach did not.
He's also stubborn in the sense that he kind of plays favorites a little bit. He picks his guys, and he follows them, even when they have no reason to be in the game. Like, you look at Irving Walker guarding Michael Lloyd Jr., who had, what, 3-4 inches on him in height and just went nuts on him, when you should have Boynton in the game on Lloyd, Shipman in on Fredette, and try to play defense off of that. But Billy's stubborn. He plays Irv. He doesn't realize Irv was having a bad offensive game, 4-16 from the field, 7 turnovers. Like, teams figured him out, but he stuck with him, and he kind of went down with Irv a little bit. And then, of course, Dan Werner. But that's – don't have to worry about that anymore, do you, fans? Dan Werner has thrown his last pass as a Gator.
Yeah, you made a really good point that I didn't really even think about for a while there, which was that if you take Kenny off of – Fredette, who's going off regardless. Yeah. Like, Kenny did a good job, but the kid still scored 37 points. It's not like Kenny was the only person on the court that could lock him down, and he was doing it, and Billy had to leave him on. Yeah. That's not what happened. So not only do you save his energy, but you get to slide him over to Lloyd, who then probably doesn't score 26 points because he's got a good defender on him now, who Kenny can guard effectively without using nearly as much energy as Fredette, like, always has his dribble going.
Exactly.
So, yeah, no, that's a great point that I didn't even think about, making it make even more sense for that move to happen. So I just can't believe that it was – not only did it not happen, it was never even tried at any point in the game.
No, yeah, but then there would be times where you'd have Boynton Shimon out there. It would work. Boynton would run the point, which is where I think his future is going to be there, I think. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to next year, Boynton's going to see a lot more time at the point. You put Irv back off the ball. Lord knows if they bring in another point guard, you know, you can mix and match in that backcourt. Maybe Irv comes off the bench, where he was very effective last year as a shooter. Right. But, you know, this year he finished 3-for-13 in his last game. He's been in a shooting slump since the beginning of the SEC season when at that time he stopped missing. But since then he's done a lot more missing, you could say. So let's take a look back on the season as a whole, I guess, if nobody has anything too much pressing to say about the BYU game. I mean, it was
a
really
great game.
It really was. I was like, I have a story from that personally. I figured, you know, going into regulation, I had enough battery life in my laptop. I didn't bring the plug out. A rookie mistake, truly. I didn't bring the plug out. I was like, I got enough time to get me to the end of regulation. Overtime. Oh, no. I got about 2 minutes into overtime before my laptop died, and I had to go take notes the old-fashioned way. But I couldn't have been any happier that it went that way. It was a really great game. Like Kyle said, they went down absolutely fighting. Kenny was completely gassed by the end of that. He was, like, when he fouled out, came onto the bench and he just, like, flat out. I felt really bad for him because he did everything he could. Like, shot well. Uncharacteristically, shot well.
Oh, yeah.
8 of 16, 5 of 10 from 3. He did everything he could. I think Chandler played fairly well, missed a couple of shots that he shouldn't have, turned the ball over a lot early on.
I think the thing about Chandler is that you have to like, though, is he obviously had an off night. Like, his shots weren't going in and stuff, but he did a lot of things to help the team win. 10 rebounds and 6 assists even on a bad day. You know, he was obviously out there hustling, doing his best. There were times where he'd take it to the hoop, couldn't finish the first time, but he'd pick up his, you know, miss and put it back in.
Yeah.
So he was really working hard the whole game, which is all you can really ask for.
The thing about that game also, now that I just remembered it, that I think is going to get overlooked a little bit is all the early turnovers. I thought they looked nervous a little bit. Like, Kenny would go out there, drive into the lane, and throw the ball out of bounds. Like, he threw it twice to just nobody. Irv had a couple of those. Chandler had a couple of those. They looked like they were pressing a little bit too much. Turning the ball over, not playing smart, but then they kind of got their feet back under and played a little better as it moved on.
I was just looking at Tyus went 3-for-11.
Yeah,
anyone who's playing inside really shouldn't have
can't
that.
Do that.
He can't,
and he has games like that all the time. It's not okay ever.
I know he feels really comfortable, I guess, with that the long two.
Yeah,
but he can't be taking that shot as often as he's done, like, towards the end of the season.
It's also kind of fun. Tyus played 29 minutes of a 50-minute game. When a player fouled out, he played 29 minutes, and Dan Werner played 36.
That's
Yeah, that's another thing to me where, like, Tyus is not one of Billy's quote-unquote guys. I'd say neither is Ray Shipman. They don't have that same work ethic.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know what it is that those two are doing. I mean, Tyus obviously starting, and he gets to play a lot of minutes. But he's not in that crunch time. I mean, Dan Warner's in, not him. And Shipman just doesn't play too much. I want to know what those two are doing that are warranting them not to get the chance to play.
Oh, I got something to say. All right. And Vernon Macklin, you see on there, despite having a really good game, 16 points, 7 boards, yeah. 7 of 9 from the field, he only plays 33 minutes, which is criminal. And that's because he picked up, didn't he pick up two fouls
in the
first half time down? Now, out there, if anybody wants to know how to coach, I recommend you watch Randy Bennett coach the St. Mary's Gales. Because Omar Samhan, now obviously Vernon Macklin's not Omar Samhan, but he did. Billy's done this with his best player before. He's done it. I've watched him do it against Kentucky with Nick Calathes.
Yeah.
Omar Samhan picks up two fouls early in the first half against Villanova, probably about 11 minutes remaining or 10 minutes remaining. What does Randy Bennett do? Oh, I don't know. Let me leave my player out there. You know why? Because you get five fouls, not three, okay? Because Omar Samhan, he ends up, you know when he picked up his third foul? Two minutes remaining in the game. 2 minutes remaining in the game. And that's how basketball can go. If you have a player who can be smart about it, just use him. Instead of, if you sit him down for the last 8 minutes of the first half, that's fouling him out. You're taking 8 minutes of game time away from who even cares if he fouls
out. Exactly.
You're going ahead and making sure that he misses time instead of just guarding against it. So let your guys play with two fouls. If they pick up three, that's fine. Sit them down. If you really feel like you need them at the end of the game, they have four in the second half at some point, sit them down with four. Sitting a player down with two fouls in the first half for an extended period of time, for 5 minutes or more, is ludicrous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And Billy's not the only coach that does it. But it bothers me every time whenever somebody does that. So, my rant.
And I want to say Murphy picked up two fouls fairly early on. So, at one point, you had Tyus Warner part. It was like, oh, hi, 2008, 2009 Gators. Welcome back to the NCAA tournament.
Right,
like,
I mean, I understand, like, they were in foul trouble, quote, unquote.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, what didn't the Gators have a size advantage in this?
It's funny.
I thought that was kind of the scouting report, is that the Gators should have been able to, you know, dominate down low. And it just didn't. Although Macklin had a very good game, it didn't seem like there was an effort to make sure those guys were getting the ball. And at least, you know, the few guys at BYU that had size, at least getting them into some foul trouble and getting them out of the game. That way, I know BYU is a great 3-point team, but that was going to be all they had, was that they were going to have to live by the three, and they weren't shooting all that great.
No, Jimmer Fredette didn't make a three till I want to say, or maybe he just made one until the second half when he just started making it rain.
Well, BYU used the same game plan that Mississippi State beat Florida with, and that a couple other teams have used against them, which is just play a zone and double the post every single time.
Right.
So every time they fed the post, they would double, and then they'd kick the ball back out, and they'd make Florida beat them from the outside, which is really smart against this team. And you can see Macklin did an excellent job of recognizing, I have a double team, let me look for the pass, where does the ball need to go, or I'm one-on-one, I need to go score.
Right.
And I thought he did a great job of that. Give BYU credit, that's the right way to play Florida, they did it. Billy played man against BYU. That was the right way to play it. So I feel like both teams, you know, defensive scheme-wise, with the exception of, you know, Kenny maybe being out of position, played that game the way it should have been done. And Macklin really just did a great job. Tyus, not so much. So
in terms of a size advantage, Florida definitely had what I called the quote-unquote athletic advantage, which, you know, anybody watching the game, you know exactly what that means. BYU did have two pretty big guys. They had, I want to say, Miles. Yeah, number 54, Chris Miles. And Noah Hartsock, number 34, who are fairly big guys. After the game, Billy said he thought it was one of the most physical games his guys had played all year, which it kind of was because those guys are roughing him up down low. Obviously, Tyus isn't well-suited for that kind of game now that he's developed into an 18-foot jump shooter. So they were giving him a little trouble down low. The problem is that they didn't exploit it as much as they should have. Tyus didn't get down low and bang like he should have.
And Tyus takes him so early. You've pointed out, it takes him so early in the shot clock.
Yeah.
That, like, it's a shame that he's shooting.
That's the thing that he needs to understand. Well, I feel like Billy has no control over Tyus because Tyus knows that he has to play. There's nothing he can do to make himself come out of lineup short of, like, punching an assistant coach. But, yeah, you can get the heels on the three-point line jump shot anytime you want in the shot clock. Anytime you want, you can take that shot. So when they come down, Tyus sets one screen, they throw the ball to him, there's 25 seconds on the clock, and he throws it up.
Like,
that's
just
not okay. Like, you can get that shot anytime you want. Work the possession, work the ball inside, see if you can get a better look, and then you can always come back and settle for that kind of a shot.
I feel as though Billy might have given, like, pretty much given all the power to Tyus when Tyus, like, you know, said he was going to transfer, yeah. and then Billy obviously talked him out of it, pretty much saying, like, we need you, yeah. you, like, we can't do anything without you. And now Tyus is in his head, is like, this team's nothing without me. I was trying to leave, and they had to beg me to come back. Like,
no,
I
yeah.
think that you pretty much are giving that player all the power. I mean, you obviously don't want to see someone transfer, but you can't just be like, we need you. Come, please come back. Please come back.
Well, because the reasons for him leaving were supposedly because he didn't like his role on the team. He didn't like his position. So, of course, like, what he was going to ask for was a little bit more freedom to do what he wants, and clearly he wants to take 18-foot jump shots. So, like,
good.
Yeah, so he got more freedom to do that, for better or worse. But as we move on, sort of looking forward, talking about next year and what we expect out of the team, I think Tyus is going to be the one guy who doesn't quite fit in with the team next year. I've said and got some hate for before, I thought it was Walter Hodge next year or last year. I think Tyus is going to be kind of out of place next year on
unless,
this team.
Unless he also buys into the system.
And maybe he will.
I mean, because you see Eric Murphy already does.
Exactly.
And, is Patrick Young
Patrick Young.
Big one?
Yeah.
I mean, he's supposed to be pretty good. So if he comes in and he's ready to play, I mean, I can see Tyus getting a little bump. But still, they just have so many depth issues, especially with Werner leaving. I know that doesn't sound like a big thing, but they can always throw
28
Werner,
minutes a night.
They always threw Werner in at the four when he shouldn't be there, you know?
Right.
So Tyus is probably going to have to play, but I can see that he has a little bit of a diminished role.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just talking about in terms of, like, style and role. I feel like, and especially with Billy, I feel like he doesn't quite fit in as much for the team next year, especially because I think we all expect a lot bigger things out of Eric Murphy next year, and I know Billy expects him
Exciting things happen
when Eric Murphy is in the game. But yeah, let's talk about next year. What do we expect out of this team next year? Back in the tournament, sort of a... You know, everybody staying? What do we think?
I mean, I haven't really thought at all about next year yet, not going to lie. But obviously, they're only losing Dan Werner, which is probably a good thing.
This might actually be a case of addition by subtraction.
Yes, this is what addition by subtraction looks like. Not your best player leaving to go play overseas. Yeah, but Dan, I mean, got, you know, good 4 years, bud. You gave it your all.
You worked
hard every night. But as far as the team goes, it's good that Billy Donovan can no longer play him in the last 5 minutes of games.
Right.
That will help them next year.
Right. And they supposedly don't lose anybody else. Of course, I'm constantly on Ray Shipman transfer watch going here into the off season. But as of now, they're not supposed to lose anybody else. Rod Tishman may go back to Israel. Who knows? But the funny thing about that is you mentioned Patrick Young, the one recruit. Casey Prather, the other one. That leaves only one scholarship open. And Billy said something interesting after the game that didn't quite click with me. He said, I need to go get a guard, which obviously he's talking about Brandon Knight. And then he said, and I need to add another body to the front court. That's two people. He has one scholarship free.
Yeah.
I found that to be a little interesting. I don't know if he's just not thinking about what he has available. Or...
I mean, he might not really be, you know, like, I only have one scholarship left. Plus, it kind of hurt him last year where he didn't, I guess he didn't expect to lose as many people as he did.
Right.
And you saw he got caught off. He was doing all that late recruiting. At that point, he was just trying to pick whatever, you know, the scraps that everyone else left behind. So I think he's kind of planning ahead where... Get these guys to be, you know, close enough that if something does happen, it's not he's starting from ground zero. He's got people who that already have a relationship with him, and it'll be much easier to convince them to come to Florida without actually, you know, trying to start the entire relationship.
Well, how many players are on scholarship right now? This year,
you have to go out and count them.
Was it not 10? It was more than 10.
The starting five plus Werner.
You got the roster right there. Do like that.
That means there's people not playing.
6, 7, 8 plus Tishman,
KG,
plus KG Allen,
and Adam Allen.
So 11.
So then there's the two freshmen coming in. So that puts you at 13 minus Werner. That's 12.
And you get 13 total.
Right.
If Brandon Knight comes to Florida,
I think they could definitely do something with Tishman by do something. I mean, make him leave or strip him of his scholarship.
Right.
I mean, sorry, like that's. You can't play 2 minutes a game and be a full scholarship player.
Right.
And then...
I think Adam Allen could be hardship bound.
You could be something like that. And then I definitely think Shipman could transfer, and it's all Billy's fault. And he's going to go somewhere. He's going to be a really good player.
Yep.
You know, not a superstar maybe, but he'll go somewhere. He'll be a main contributor. It'll be a Jonathan Mitchell situation.
Yeah.
Go somewhere, he'll put up, you know, good numbers. Somebody who, oh, hey, that'd be really nice to have that guy on our team right now.
You hear that, Ray Shipman? Rutgers, always an option.
Oh, man.
Always an option.
The big thing
with Brandon Knight, I think the Gators have a reasonable shot at him, but it's got to be based on what Kentucky does. Because it seems kind of, it's Kentucky and Florida. And he's going to be – he's kind of a guy that you put as a – he wants to be a one-and-done probably. He wants to get to the NBA as fast as possible. So it's where can I play right away? And, I mean, John Wall's gone. You can already pretty much write that off. But I think if Bledsoe stays, then he might be one and go try to find a spot where he's definitely got – he's going to be the star. And that might – he might have that chance at Florida. So I think it's kind of – it might not be so much on what John Wall does as what Eric Bledsoe does because – you don't want to really have to be sharing time with someone.
It's true in that it would be his backcourt if both of them leave, but at the same time, Calipari has proven he can make a star while having two point guards at the same time in terms of Wall and Bledsoe.
Yeah, he's obviously played Wall and Bledsoe together this year, but to me, it all comes down to how well Kenny Boynton can recruit him. Like, I think it's Kenny Boynton versus John Calipari. Like, if they have a good enough relationship where he can talk him into coming, then it'll happen. If not, I think he'll go to Kentucky. So,
how would you balance if you're Billy or Kenny and you're trying to sell him? How would you try to deal with Irving, Kenny, like a 3-point guard backcourt, essentially? How would you try to sell him on that?
I mean, if he comes, he's going to start, and he needs to know that. And that's true, too. Like, I don't know. That's best for everyone. It's not like he'd be lying to him there. So if he comes, he's going to start. You would think that Irving's going to be coming off the bench in the future. And that should be his role, probably. I mean, he had stretches this year where he played really well. But for the most part, he pretty much struggled in that role. And I think he's much better served coming off the bench and doing a little bit of both. He can come in, play the one, play the two,
exactly,
give you some depth. And he'll still see, 20 minutes a game doing that, 25 minutes a game doing that. So he just won't be playing 35 minutes a game with the ball in his hands for 30 of them. Yeah. So
it's like, hey, Billy, you know what wouldn't kill you to have? A backup point guard, like a real backup point guard, instead of having to take your point guard off, move your shooting guard to point, and bring in a backup shooting guard. I think if they can pull Brandon Knight, which we'll find out, I think middle of April is the
period. I mean, whenever people start he's probably going to wait. I don't know which comes first. That's signing day or when people are starting to announce for the NBA. But if I'm him, I'm waiting it out. I want to see where people are going. I want to see who's leaving, who's staying, what the team's going to look like. There's no reason for him not to.
All right, and let's look back now that we've gone through all this at some of the initial predictions we made before the season. We can have a good laugh, perhaps pat ourselves on the back.
Have a good cry.
I mean, I'm
certainly going to have a couple of good cries.
I probably wasn't wrong about any of my predictions.
Probably. Let's start off with one that Bobby was wrong about right away. We had, this is some over-unders. We said regular season wins. The regular season trips us up a little bit. If we were to adjust this to total wins, we would have somebody who was precisely correct in this category. Mm-hmm. We set the over-under, a brilliant over-under, at 21.5.
It really was. I remember saying it was brilliant at the time.
Because they finished 21. Mm-hmm. So, Bobby, you said over 23. You were wrong.
I was. Right, but in my defense, had they beat Georgia and probably
South Alabama.
And South Alabama, I win this easily. Like,
yeah, because you get it right. That easily.
They also could have picked up a loss if Chandler Parsons had thrown a 75-foot buzzer
I don't
beater
count
against
those.
NC State.
You can't control stuff like that, all right? Losing to South Alabama and Georgia, you can control. 75-footers, they're going to go when they go.
All right, Kyle, you said under 21. Well done.
Thank you.
Hold off that crying just for a little while later.
it'll be flowing later.
And I said over at 22. So we were all right in the wheelhouse. Nobody was ridiculous and said 18, and nobody said 25. So nice job on us. This one, clearly the Kenny Boynton preseason hype was out of control.
Right.
I'm sorry. The points per game for Kenny Boynton, we set at 17.2 because that was what Calathes averaged the last year, I think. Kyle, you said under narrowly, so you're correct.
Right,
you're correct technically.
So
Bob, you said under and 15-16. He finished averaging 14.
No, I was the closest.
And
put
that
in the win category for Bobby.
An under is an under, man.
And I may have said over.
Yeah, but you barely went over. You went 17.4.
Yeah, I was only 3.
I mean, it's embarrassing, but not as embarrassing.
I was only 3.4 points off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Bobby, this is probably
1-3 a game. That's all he needed to do.
Yeah, exactly. And he shot enough of them. Bobby, this is where you should probably take the most pride. I don't care you should. I don't care what you did for.
We're
the rest
just gonna
of
exclude
it.
Me from the rest of them because I'm probably wrong about the rest. But this one, you listen to, and then that's all you need to know about how skilled I am at predicting things.
Especially what you said about Vernon Macklin. But you said all five players, and by that all five starters, would average in double digits. You were correct. An impressive call because I don't know if. Because I don't know if you would consider Dan Werner a starter.
No,
then.
It was Chandler Parsons all along. Don't worry about the fact they said Dan Werner lose his job to Shipman. I meant Parsons. And also don't pay attention to what I said about Parsons.
Right. So the spread was 10.6 for Macklin, 11.8 for Tyus, 12.4 for Parsons, 12.6 for Walker, and 14 for Boynton. A very nice balance by them. Bobby, good call on that. Next up for over-under was Tyus points per game. We set it at 14, which seemed like, come on. Like, of course he's going to get more than 14. Like we said, he finished at 11.8. Kyle, you said way over.
Good job.
He averaged 17 to 18 points a game. Bobby said under 13. He averaged 12. And I said over 15.5. I thought this team apparently before the season was going to score 100 points a game.
Well, if you think about it, it seems like we're way off on these. But, like, think about they really didn't score any points this year. Like, right. All their games were, like, in the 60s. Yeah.
For the record, I wasn't way off about these.
That was your first hit. So, all right, anyway. But it's like, I don't know. I thought Tyus let me down more than any other player this year as far as, like, my expectations of him and how he played during the season. I thought Tyus was just primed to have a great year, and he really just didn't want to play team ball.
Yeah,
so.
he was probably the biggest disappointment, I'd say. Even Boynton, you know, who was obviously just a horrific shooter for most of the year, he didn't disappoint because he played good defense. He still led the team in scoring. I don't know. Tyus, to me, was the bigger disappointment there. And he's a freshman.
Exactly. That's the thing. Kenny Boynton had no body of work. Alex Tyus had 2 years where we saw him, you know, come along, improve, and it seemed like he would take another step, and he stepped backwards, in my opinion. So,
all right, the next one, Bob, be ready to cry. Vernon Macklin, points per game plus rebounds per game. He finished at 16.1, 10.6 points plus 5.5 rebounds. We set the over-under at 17. Bob, you said over. Kyle?
I mean, that's pretty close. I'll give myself.
I'll tell you what's close. Kyle, you said under, not even close.
He scored way more points than I thought he was going to. That's
at a 60% shooting rate.
At a 60% shooting rate, which you were right about.
Just barely, though, 60.7. Like, I couldn't have cut that in closer.
Still, that's very impressive that he did that.
And I said under at 14 to 15. So I call that pretty close. 15 when he averaged about 16?
Yeah, we were both pretty close. It wasn't bad.
Ooh, I'm going to have to do some math on this one. Hold on as I get out a calculator. Irving
Good
Walker.
Good thing you bought that $1 calculator.
It is. I bought a $1 calculator.
Oh, you're serious. You're actually going to get it.
Oh, yeah, because I got
right, I'll say this. I'm wrong about it. I felt really bad soon after I made this prediction when I went back and looked at TG, Torian Green's numbers, and realized he never even got close to this number.
I told and you that. I looked it up on the air.
I felt awful once we looked that up. But once again, my pride got in the way, and I was too proud to go back on something I said, which hurt me really bad in the NCAA tournament bracket,
right,
by the way.
The number we're referring to is Irving Walker assists per game. I set the over-under at 6. Bobby said over, around 7. Kyle, you said way under, 4 to 4.5. And I said under. Kyle and I were correct. He averaged 4.88 assists.
Good job, guys. Way
per
to go.
Game. So it's like Kyle said, and I think Kyle said on this podcast, like, nobody in Billy's system gets a ton of assists. Like, right. That's just kind of how it works.
Except Nikola, this because he's awesome.
Because he just creates for anybody.
This is another one I'm really proud of.
This one we should probably skip. Rod Tishman.
He doesn't count, does he?
Minutes per game. Once again, I was driving the Rod Tishman hype bandwagon at the beginning of the year.
Convinced me.
I'm sorry, once again. Over under, 9.5 minutes per game. Kyle and I, we said under, but I said about 9. Just barely under. Bob, you said over at 11.
Yeah, that's what he averaged, right? If you...
Final minutes per game count... 2.3.
Well, see, what I was doing is 11 has two ones. If you add those two ones together, you got a 2. So I was right.
And he played 7 games. Right. Kyle McClanahan played 11. We should have done Kyle McClanahan minutes per game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over under 5? Over.
I would have lost that one. I want to say I've only missed one so far. I want to say that now because once we get to the NCAA tournament, all respect that any of the listeners may have for me is going to go out the window. So.
All right.
I know this one, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You wrote it backwards. I'll say that.
Yeah, definitely. Sleepers and busts we did. I'm a little ashamed of myself because I didn't say Parsons is a sleeper because I just assumed he was going to be so awesome I didn't need to count him as a sleeper.
Yeah, my
Chandler love is coming soon. But sleepers bust, Bob, you said Shipman sleeper, Parsons bust.
Like I said, you have that backwards. You should listen to it over again after I alter the audio. It'll definitely say Shipman bust.
What would you consider Shipman this year? It's like a Billy, like Billy did him wrong?
Yeah, neither. Like, yeah. It wasn't his fault, whatever happened.
And Parsons was obviously a big success, all things considered.
Great success.
Kyle, your sleeper was Kenny Cagey.
I'm taking injury hardship on that one. No one knows what Cagey would have done if he would have played.
I mean, you
have a small body of work, and it's not impressive.
I can tell you what he did in the 8 games in 5.6. Jeez, he only played 5.6 minutes per game. He Kyle McClanahan almost averaged more minutes per game than
That's
him.
That's right.
In the 8 games Kenny Cagey did play before going out with a herniated disc in his back and having season-ending back surgery, he averaged 1.8 rebounds per game.
Now extrapolate that out and imagine what you would have got.
And then your bust, because you were very low on this guy, was Vernon Macklin.
So I'll put this through as Vernon Macklin, you're a much better scorer than I thought. Yeah. Your scoring is even – it's a positive. You're a good scorer down low. I'll give you that. But – Yeah. Still didn't do what I wanted you to do, what Billy wants every big man to do, what every coach wants every big man to do, which is rebound and block shots. The only thing worse than your rebounding is your shot blocking. And
less than a block a game.
Yeah, he's got to fix that for next year and become more of a presence. So, mixed results for him. I definitely would not call him a bust, though. Yeah. I was wrong. He did well this year. But he still has a lot of area to improve in his game.
Yeah, he's got to get tougher. He's got to get more physical down low so he's not getting pushed around by, 6'8 white guys from BYU. And then I actually had the same bust, but it was just in terms of what people expect out of him. I'd still say I was wrong because, he did get the 10-6 basically. So, you got to give him props for that. I'd say I was wrong about my bust. My sleeper was Eric Murphy. He didn't fully wake up yet. He's coming.
Him and Shipman are in the same, right. Did him wrong category, I think. So
Eric Murphy finished the year averaging 3.5 points a game and 2.5 rebounds a game. He's gonna be really good though. Exciting things happen when Eric Murphy's
nine on the minutes. Is that right?
In
9 minutes.
9.1 minutes per game.
Jesus.
9.1.
He's
yeah.
in Hollinger's system. He's probably a very effective player.
It's like Maurice Spates after the the championship.
40 minutes. It's insane.
Averaging 40 points and 28 rebounds a game. Jesus. All right, so those were our sleepers and busts. We're wrong. But final season predictions, props to all of us on this just for getting them in the tournament. Kyle?
Except special props.
For Kyle, first round NCAA tournament loss.
To BYU, he wrote it down. That was the most impressive part.
I said a second round NCAA tournament loss. Bobby, you said a Sweet 16 loss.
They're still in there, according to my bracket.
By your bracket. That's the thing. You stuck with yourself. You called yourself foolishly optimistic. You
and
admitted
I was foolishly proud afterwards.
Right.
So everything points to me being a fool.
1 second. I don't have this
just
written.
Just a lot of foolishness from Bob.
I don't have this written down. Bob, what was your predicted SEC record for them, out of curiosity?
It was,
I just
it was I believe, what was it, 12-8? No, that's not. 12-4.
I think it was 12-4.
I wanted to play. Yeah, no, I gave him a few extra. I'll say this. I wanted it to be 10-6. For some reason, I wrote down 12-4. Once again, too proud to go back on what I put down on paper, so I stuck with it. And for a little bit, there was still a chance at the end of the season, until the Georgia loss.
Yeah.
They still had a small, small outside chance of doing it, and I would have been very proud of myself for my foolishness once
again.
Yeah,
they finished 9-7 in SEC play.
Yeah,
who had that? Raise your hand. One.
Once again, by mistake, you had the same thoughts as me for 10-6.
No, I put something wrong down. No, I went to 9-7, and then towards the end of the season, I was kicking myself because it looked like there was no way they weren't going to get 10.
Yeah.
I should have just went 10. So I did feel that way, but ended up being right despite myself.
All right, let's do the outrageous predictions here. Let's start with Kyle. I'm going to save mine for last.
No, don't start.
Kyle, you
start with me. I don't want to go last.
You got one right and one wrong, even though this one here wasn't really that outrageous. You said Tyus and Boyan would combine for 35 points per game. Again, this team scored 100 points a game before the season started.
Count it.
They finished averaging 25.8.
Yeah, 10 points off.
About, 9.2 off.
You know what else hurt me?
That
in these thinkings? Chandler Parsons, I didn't realize he was going to be a 13 points a game scorer.
You didn't, did you?
Someone else did.
You were about a 2 Kenny Boyan threes and 3 18-foot jump shots from Tyus a game.
Well, Tyus just could have shot, not 3 for 11 every other game.
Right. Bob, you said Vernon Macklin would finish around a double-double on the year. You backed down from this, too, because you were dead set on double-double. You said over 9 in points per game and rebounds per game. Obviously, you got it in points, missed on it in rebounds. Kyle countered, saying Vernon Macklin would finish under 6 rebounds per game. 5.5.
Saved a little fist.
So there you go. And then let's bring it home with this guy.
Oh, God.
I said, because nobody believed in us. I'm gonna say us at this point. Me and, of course, Chandler Parsons. You guys had Dan Werner starting over him for, the whole year.
No, I changed it. I said Shipman would win the job.
Right.
I'm 100% sure I said it shouldn't happen, but that's how it would be. So,
right.
And I was wrong.
Don't think I wrote it down, but you gave one of my favorite quotes of all time in the Hoopstravaganza podcast, where you said Chandler Parsons was more likely to score 20 points in a game than Dan Werner, but he's also more likely to score 0 points in a game than Dan Werner.
For this year. True.
Because then Dan Werner scored 0 points.
100 times in a row, yeah.
Let's just go ahead and say this. I said Chandler Parsons would average 13 points per game and 6.5 rebounds per game. He didn't actually end up averaging 13 points a game. He averaged 12.4.
So you were wrong.
I was a little wrong.
Just say you were
wrong. I was a little wrong. However,
Atterbury was wrong.
Rebounds per game, 6.9.
Impressive.
Tied for the team lead in rebounds.
You said 6.5.
He was
6.9, 6.5?
He was 0.9 off combined.
Yeah.
In both categories. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, props on that.
He was still wrong.
Mad props.
He was just as wrong as I was.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But, yeah, actually, you know, it turns out we were a little hit and miss. But overall, we had, a decent feel for where this team was
heading. We all had some
really
good ones and some really, really bad ones.
I'd even argue, though, where we missed worse wasn't as bad as, is how impressive it was when we hit, other than maybe 35 points per game thing. But, again, I thought Kenny was scoring 18 points a game this year. I didn't think he was going to shoot 29% from three. So.
I mean, that was predictable.
My only misses were Boynton and Tyus points related, so I'll take that. I was wrong about one thing.
Yeah, definitely a pretty good year. I think you may be able to trust our hoops predictions more than our football predictions.
Unless it comes to the NCAA tournament.
Speaking of the NCAA tournament, let's talk about how it's going so far and how screwed up and ruined our brackets are.
That might have been one of the best segues we've ever made.
Right there. Yeah, it was really well done. And now that we just ruined it by talking about how good the segue is, Kyle, how's your bracket doing?
Awesome. It's awesome. No, this is by far the worst I've ever done at this. And I do pretty bad at this every year. But this is just unbelievable. I don't know what happened. Like I said, pretty much every single close game has gone against me. Any buzzer beater type shot has gone against me. I can't get anything done. And then at least the whole time I was like, well, hopefully Kansas will win it for me.
Nope.
And they go down to Northern Iowa.
One year, just to see how well it works out, I want to pick opposite of you in every single thing.
And just see what happens.
Yeah, just to see what happens.
Opposite of me?
Yeah, everything's opposite.
I've never done this bad ever. I don't, that wouldn't work most years. So I don't know.
You're picking 16 seeds to win, Bob?
Yeah,
what are you,
absolutely
crazy?
It'll make the second round upset even easier.
Well, Bob somehow is atop our office.
Yeah, but I'm not really. I've done better than everyone else, I guess, in these first two rounds. But my potential is not as high as everyone else.
Right.
The big thing is I'm the only one in our pool that has Ohio State winning it. So it comes down to if Ohio State wins, I'm going to win this pool. But if not, then I'm out.
Bob has certainly done well so far. He's the 97.7 percentile on ESPN.com, ahead of our president, ahead of the leader of the food world, Bob.
As I've said multiple times, I'm smarter than Barack Obama.
That's fair.
Wait, maybe not to you guys.
Didn't Barack have Kansas winning it or no?
I believe
he
did.
He always goes chalk, so.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he did.
Rock chalk. Rock, yeah. Good chalk, rock chalk, yeah.
If I had to repick right now, I'd pick Ohio State, but I also feel good about Syracuse. It's going
to
be one of those.
That's the big one I need to lose, because a lot of people in our pool have Syracuse winning, so if they're out, it really comes down, it could easily come down to if Ohio State, Kansas State, or Kentucky winning it, because those are the only three, unique picks.
A couple people have Kansas State. Actually,
Kansas State. That's what I was saying. It's Kansas State, Kentucky, or Ohio State are the unique picks in our pool.
Kansas State's not winning.
No.
I'll eat my
But it's all our boy Chang. He loves Miami. Clemente went to Miami for a year or so. So he's all about Clemente. And
he's all about the U, Chang. But anyway, yeah, I was actually, you mentioned the Kansas-Northern Iowa game. I was at that because it was at the Oklahoma City Regional.
A good thing that came out of your trip?
Yeah, other than my relationship with a cabbie in Oklahoma City named Haji, who is now my friend. I have his phone number and his business card.
He's on Facebook.
It just says Haji.
It does, with his phone number. But yeah, that was one of the most incredible games I've ever seen, just in terms of the experience of seeing it happen.
Man.
Northern Iowa, just a bunch of hardworking white guys. really put it together, great team. And that the guy whose name I can't pronounce, Ali Farouk Manesh. Yeah. One of the ballsiest shots I've ever seen in my entire life.
So much confidence out of that kid.
35 seconds left. He pulls up. It's one on two. And he pulls up, takes a three. He hesitated for half a second. He's screw it. I'm taking it.
There was a 3-second difference between the shot clock and game clock. They could have easily just tried to hold on to the ball as long as possible. That way Kansas didn't have any time. But instead, he just went for the dagger, a legitimate dagger shot.
Kansas definitely would have fouled there.
Well, yeah,
still. 3 seconds left.
Yeah, but the one, it was funny too, because Northern Iowa couldn't break the press at all. It was like they just didn't know how, like, oh, right. what is this thing coming at us? Full court. Like,
that's the thing I was really impressed with out of Northern Iowa was there was that little time stretch where Kansas went into the press and they're like, okay, just give me that ball twice. Like, yeah. We just took the ball twice from you in a row. And I thought Northern Iowa for sure was going to melt down there and lose their composure. But they didn't, and they had enough to move on. An absolutely incredible game.
Yeah, and I think, especially with Kalen Lucas possibly not playing, I think 90% chance not playing, I think they go to the Elite Eight.
Oh, man. And that makes things – if Ohio State makes it, that makes their trip to the Final Four.
Exactly.
Almost as easy as Florida's first year where they got George Mason – or, like, the championship game. Right. Where they got George Mason in the Final Four. Yeah.
All right, so what do you guys think of the remaining people? What are you sticking to? What do you think out of the?
I mean, I'm sticking with Ohio State.
Are we gonna make? I love them. You want to make predictions on these games?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Or maybe I can make a little respect back here. Yeah. Or double down on not knowing anything.
This is all or nothing.
You might want to just abstain from this.
All right, let's start off in the Midwest with the Panthers of Northern Iowa versus Michigan State Spartans.
You really?
I'll say it now. Northern Iowa. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm torn.
No team that loses to Florida deserves to be in the Elite Eight.
Oh, you go with the same method as no team Rutgers, that loses to Rutgers will win a game?
I had neither of these teams going this far, so at no point did I consider this as a possible matchup. Tom Izzo is such a friggin' good coach. They shouldn't even be where they are right now. I'll take Northern Iowa, and Tom Izzo is definitely going to get me. So.
I have Michigan State going this far. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to ride Michigan State out to the Elite Eight.
Kalen Lucas, I think the story says 90% chance he won't play.
Either way, apparently it was, a torn Achilles that they're saying now. That's what it is. So he's definitely out.
What was the chances that Lawson wasn't going to play last
year? I'm going to feel really good about Ohio State's chances to get to the Final Four. So I like it.
You'll take Michigan State.
Yeah. Either team that makes the Elite Eight there, I feel good against Ohio State going against them. They just got to get past Tennessee, which also I feel really good about.
All right.
Thank you, Kansas, for losing.
Next one down at the bottom of that bracket. It's losing time in Tennessee because the Volunteers are in the Sweet 16, where they tend to just fall out. They're playing
Ohio
State.
Which one of us had Tennessee in the Sweet 16? Oh, no, this guy.
Not I. So, I certainly didn't have Ohio in the second round. Like the unbelievable loss, Georgetown's unbelievable loss.
Let me just say this: I don't want any bragging out of anyone because this is by far the most ridiculous tournament of all time. It's like
this
only upsets are happening.
This came at a perfect time for when like so much like the field needs to be expanded. Talk is going on because there's so many upsets, so many close games with like some 15-2s, you know, some close games there that there's a great argument that like. Clearly, that if all these teams are playing close, a couple more teams is going to make this field even better.
Yeah,
so this could have become a better time for the coaches to have this talk. It's almost as though they're scheming. Like, they're like, listen, just throw this game. That way we can have more teams in the field.
All right, so ride your Ohio State pick. If you win with Ohio State, I'll give you dap. I'll pat you on the back. I'll rub your tummy if you want.
Oh, but, you know how much I love that.
But don't friggin' brag to me about Tennessee being the Sweet 16. You shut your mouth.
Well,
I'm taking the Buckeyes.
The big thing is... The big thing is that I knew Georgetown can't go far. They lost to Rutgers. I had them in the second round, but overall, in the end, they lost to Rutgers. You can't be that good.
All right, I'm also
and that's why.
I'm also going to take Ohio State there. I think I have them as a Final Four team. So
right.
Ohio State is going to play Northern Iowa. Do we want to keep going with this?
Yeah.
All right, Ohio State.
Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, you know where Ohio State is.
Everyone's got Ohio State in the Final Four.
All right, and then moving on down to the West, Syracuse Butler.
I'll take Cuse.
Yeah.
I'll go back on that. I had Vanderbilt beating them there, but I'll take Cuse.
I have Syracuse win this game, so.
Are we doing Reggie's and Kyle's on this show?
Yeah.
Great. I'll save it then.
Yeah. All right, so we all got Syracuse moving on there at the bottom of the bracket. Xavier, Kansas State.
All right, this is the one part of my bracket where I may have said something smart. I may have. I don't want to jinx it, but I had this matchup, and I have Xavier winning. No reason to change now. Please, let me have something to hang my hat on, Minutemen.
Well, in the game Florida versus Pitt, which is what I had, I'm sticking with Pitt, riding them out. So
Xavier. Also Musketeers, not Minutemen, sorry.
Yeah.
I'll go with Xavier.
You going with Xavier? I'm actually
good move. You should have done the first time.
This is
I know,
terrible.
I felt
because
awful about that.
I'm also going to take Xavier, which and this is just because, and I'll go ahead and say it now. I have a 6 seed or below in every region advancing to the Elite Eight.
That's
because that's what this tournament is about. It's one of those years like where George Mason made it to the Final Four. This is one of those years. All right, so then we
Thank
all
goodness.
Have.
Goodness, I'm tired of chalk.
Right.
From the last
exactly.
couple of years.
So then we all have Syracuse Xavier.
I want to pick Xavier, but I'm going to take Cuse. I think they look good their first two games. Andy Rollins is really a beast. I'll take Cuse.
My pride is getting the best of me. I'm taking Xavier. Let's do it. Bob. Let's do it. Right. Let's go, Xavier.
All right, I'm also taking...
Xavier?
Good job. No, I'm also taking Syracuse. The right pick there.
Don't jinx that, please. No, you do not want to be on the same side as me.
I know.
Right
I feel bad. I feel bad about this, but Syracuse is my champion, so I gotta ride this one out.
I'm sorry for taking them out then for you.
All right, let's move on then to the East, the matchup we all were so excited about in the prediction show.
Jay Billis certainly was.
Kentucky, Cornell. Brains, brawn, fight.
I'll take Kentucky.
Right.
No, don't do it, Paul.
I'm going to take Kentucky.
Yeah,
I picked it. I said I feel awful about Cornell's matchup, although I'm rooting for Cornell, despite the fact that Ohio State and Kentucky are my only two Final Four teams left. I want the upset. Yeah. I love it. Cornell, do it. Let's go, Big Red.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to take
but
Kentucky.
But I'm taking Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm taking Kentucky as well. I think Cornell could like keep it close if they slow down the game to an extreme degree and they don't let John Wall and Eric Bledsoe just run all over them.
If they can stop the game, they can keep it close.
They can just get the ball stuck somewhere where nobody can get to
Yeah.
All right. And then,
take the power out or something so they can't play. Something of that sort.
All right. And then the bottom of this bracket, Washington, number 11 seed versus West Virginia, 2 seed.
All right. I have a chance to get my actual two Elite Eight teams in on this side. I won't
the only
out.
Two teams you've been right about in this bracket.
Exactly. Why stop now? West Virginia, I'll take them.
All right.
Well, I mean, you know, I had Marquette over West Virginia here, so let's ride Washington.
Washington. Oh, no, I don't want to be on Bob's side.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do.
I want to be on my own side, all right? I play by my own rules.
As far away from me as possible.
All right, well, that's good, because I'm also going to take Washington. Once again, I think it's just one of those bizarre games. An 11 seed gets into the Elite Eight. Why not? So then who's the Final Four team coming out of the East? Kentucky?
Yeah.
I'm not going to switch. West Virginia's my lone Final Four team that has a chance to go, so I'll stay on that pick.
Wow. All right, let's move on to the South then. You got Duke and the unbelievable, inexplicable Purdue Boilermakers.
Nothing makes me more angry than Purdue being in the Sweet 16. I'm so freaking angry at this.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take Duke, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, I had Louisville beating Duke, so that worked out well. So I'll take Duke.
You taking Duke? Yeah. I'm also going to take Duke there. And then, bottom of the bracket, number 3, Baylor. Number 10, St. Mary's. Let me just give some love to Omar Sanham first.
He's a man.
He's awesome. There you go. All right, Baylor, St. Mary's. We'll come back to him later.
Succinct.
I have a lot to say about him later. Baylor, St. Mary's. I like St. Mary's. I'll say it. I said it.
I'll take Baylor.
I love St. Mary's. I had them beating Richmond, but I also had Villanova in the Final Four, but I'll take St. Mary's over Baylor.
All right, and then what do we got here? Duke, your championship game. Who's going to the Final Four from there?
Final Four? Yeah. From which one?
From Duke? It's Duke. I have Duke, St. Mary's.
I'll take Baylor.
Baylor?
Yeah.
Kyle?
I'll take St. Mary's. Why not? Might as well ride him. Yeah, you're going with
me. Yeah, I'm taking St. Mary's.
It's definitely not happening.
All right, and that means our Final Fours are all set here. Let's go ahead and say what we expect out of them. Bob, you have Ohio State, Xavier.
I'm too proud.
Ohio State.
also, that's a good pick. Yeah.
And then you have Kentucky, Baylor.
As much as I'd rather see Baylor, I gotta pick Kentucky.
All right, who's your champion? Ohio State.
Ohio State, I picked that. Come on,
sticking proud, Kyle. Ohio State, Cuse.
I mean, this is the championship game for me.
Yeah.
Pick Syracuse.
I'm jumping with Bob.
No!
I like Evan Turner too much. I'm sorry, Bob. I just jinxed you and Evan Turner and the state of
Ohio. Oh,
goodness. The great state of Ohio.
Then West Virginia, St. Mary's.
West Virginia. Yeah. I can only push St. Mary's so far.
That's not what I have, right? Oh, no, we already picked my game.
Yeah. You were here.
And then I'll take Ohio State over West
Virginia.
Ohio
State's your champ.
Yeah.
All right, well.
I feel awful.
I'm going to stick.
I'm sorry. I really am. I'm very sorry.
I'm going to stick with what got me here, my championship game, Syracuse, Kentucky, and my champion, Syracuse.
Good job.
My championship game's still intact.
Yeah.
I'm so cool.
I'm just saying. I was wrong about Villanova, obviously, because Kyle picked them.
Right.
So that hurt me right there. And now you're jumping on Ohio State. You're trying to make sure I don't get this money.
Who invaded Scotty Reynolds' body for the NCAA tournament.
I was saying, this, like, me and you both went, like, for at least for the Villanova, we both love Scotty Reynolds. Yeah. There's no way Scotty Reynolds in his 8 years in college wasn't going to make it to the championship.
I love Corey Fisher more, but I'll always love Scotty Reynolds for hitting that shot to put them in the Final Four last year against, who was it, Pitt?
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody on Twitter made a Space Jam, like, Monstars joke where the things creep into their bodies. Because not just him, Sherron Collins in that game against Northern Iowa.
That's right. I feel bad for Scotty, though, because at least on Twitter, everyone is just hammering him hard. It's like, oh, yeah, he's never led his team to the Final Four before, you know? Like, obviously, they're missing a little bit from last year. Dante Cunningham's not on the team anymore. And it's like, I feel bad for the kid. Like, he played miserably, but he's obviously done it before, so give him a little bit of slack. He might not be a great pro, but he's a good college player.
All right, if this isn't going to take away from your Reggie, let's go around the room. I already said mine with the Northern Iowa thing. What's been the coolest or, like, your favorite moment of March Madness so far, if it's done to take away from your Reggie?
Oh, wow. I've done a lot of screaming at the TV, both in good and bad. Oh, I'll give you my favorite moment. We were just talking about this off air. In the St. Mary's Villanova game, I believe it was Villanova game, what's that guy's Della Vidova?
I will look it up right now. I could not tell you how to pronounce it.
I believe it's Della Vidova.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a play kind of in the second half where he's taking the ball up and somebody tries to take the ball from him. Matthew Della Vidova tries to take the ball from him on the wing, and the guy reaches in to steal the ball. He kind of like trips, like dives for the ball. Della Vidova trips over him and then kind of spins around him. Now, he goes to the ground, but he keeps his dribble going while he's on the ground. Then he just pops up and wets a three, like, right from there. That's the coolest play I've ever seen. Yeah. Like, that's something straight off the AM1 tour. It was incredible. One of the best plays I've seen this tournament. So that, I'll go with that as my favorite moment that I watched.
Good pick.
My favorite is I was watching, I mean, I'm obviously most people were, the Vandy Murray State game. And I know
Kyle was watching.
I was rooting against Kyle. I said, Vandy, I know is Vandy going to the Final Four. This is going to be a great upset. And of course, it comes to a buzzer beater, which it was a great buzzer beater for me. One of the better ones I've gotten to see, like, while watching the game live.
All right. Well, I already said mine was the Northern Iowa upset over Kansas, but I gotta say, for a moment, I wasn't there for. It would have to be Omar Samhan's post game interview. This man, I read a New York Times story, and it was like explaining a little more. The guy's incredible. After beating Villanova, it said. Somebody asked him, like, what the win meant. He's like, I know you're supposed to be diplomatic about this stuff and say we haven't thought about it enough. He said, number one, best win ever. Quote it. Omar Samhan said, best win ever. It was. This guy is a reporter's dream. Yeah. And you know why? He's a communications major. And he's had to start writing stories. I read this in, I think it was the Times. And he had to start doing stuff. And he said his freshman year, he was, like, just a cliche machine, like every athlete ever. You see, like, you know, one game at a time, go, work hard, blah, blah, blah. And then he said he had to start writing stories, and he realized what the reporters were working with. So he just he was like, you know what? I'm going to give y'all interesting stuff. I'm going to tell y'all how I feel.
What a baller.
God bless you, Omar Samhan.
More importantly, God bless St. Mary's media relations that would let him do that, give honest opinion on stuff instead of making them stick to the same stuff, walking them over, giving them a speech of what to say and not to say.
I doubt the media blitz there is quite
but still, thanks.
Maybe the Australian media covers that team quite a bit.
Yeah, true. So many Australians on that team.
Five is the count.
Well, what's his name? Mickey McConnell, is that the point guard?
Yeah, Ben Allen, another starter for them. A few others. I mean, Patty Mills was Australian.
Right, so. They go to that Australian.
I like that team better with Patty Mills.
I think they like themselves probably a little bit more right now.
They miss Patty.
All right, let's wrap this up with our weekly awards, our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. And since I got, you know, I'm feeling happy today, we're going to end with our Reggies. So we're going to start on a bad note with our Kyles. And Kyle, why don't you start us off?
Okay, my Kyle Jackson is going to go once again to Murray State. Now, if you recall, a couple podcasts ago when the tournament field was first starting to be set with these conference tournaments, Murray State knocked out one of my very favorite teams in the nation, Morehead State, and I gave them a Kyle Jackson. Now, I don't know if I've ever given multiple Kyle Jacksons on this show and all the times that we've done this. So, Murray State, congrats. I think you're the first double Kyle Jackson receiver ever.
I'm sure Urban Meyer and, like, Phil.
Phil's probably got, like, seven or eight for me, but...
Yeah, speaking of
No, I'm not quite.
Okay. You're never
getting warmed up.
So I get into the reason why I'm getting warmed up. I had Vanderbilt in the Final Four, and Murray State beat them with a buzzer beater. I watched it happen. It was so horrible. Vanderbilt, you know, did a good job sticking in that game, even though they played really bad, and everybody had them on upset watch.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they definitely would have got past the next round and then would have had a big game with Syracuse coming up. So, Murray State, you broke my heart yet again. I'm very upset with you guys, and I'm glad that you're out.
Yeah. I am going with the repeat offender
of
Pissed Mouse Off, and that's Urban Meyer. He, you know, we get a nice little practice schedule of when practice starts and when it ends. And, you know, some of us, you know, get there a little bit before, you know, watch most of practice or get there just as it's supposed to be ending, only to find out that we have to wait an hour longer because for some reason practice never ends when it's supposed to. I know he doesn't think we have lives, but we all actually have lives and would like to do other things besides stand outside and watch him give a speech for 20 minutes and where it seems as though they're playing some game of Simon Says because people raise their hands randomly, do weird clapping motions. I'm pretty sure they're just playing Meyer Says or Urban Says, however you want to call it. And it's just killing an hour of time just to piss us off at this point. I'm pretty sure about that.
Nice. Well, I think I might round this out with repeat offenders because I'm sure I gave Kyle Jackson to this at some point last summer. Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, I revisited you, the big friendly, the Renaissance City. I was back for the NCAA tournament. And, you know, I was stuck there because Florida decided to lose Thursday immediately. I probably could have come back Friday.
I like the idea that they chose to lose. Like,
oh, yeah.
Listen, Adam's here.
Adam's here, guys.
Let's make this trip awful.
Our season's already a success. We made the tournament, whatever. Adam is going to be stuck here with very little to do if we lose here. So they lost, and I was stuck in Oklahoma City till Sunday morning. I figured, all right, that's cool. I'll go out and I'll explore the town again, you know, whatever. I'll do what I can. I'll stay busy. It is a $25 cab ride to get anywhere from where my hotel was in Oklahoma City. And on top of that, the sky fell down on Saturday. Just blizzard conditions. 10 to 12 inches of snow. It was like 30 degrees, 30 to 50 mile per hour winds. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. And then on top of that, this one's a little bit to the Ford Center, but mostly to the NCAA. Internet per day in the Ford Center for media was $16.50 per day.
Incredible.
Internet period?
Wireless internet. Well, yeah, there was no wired internet option.
Oh, wow.
That's, yeah. $16.50 a day. So you think I was there for media day.
Don't they know we're poor?
Clearly not. I was there for media day, Florida's game, and then I went back Saturday for that set of games.
I've never heard of that.
$50 for internet, basically.
Bob and I have covered SEC championship football. We've covered Sugar Bowl. We've got Phil and Mike have covered a national championship game. I've never heard of this.
$16.50, and it didn't even work that great.
We should ask McCall what it was when he covered first round 2 years ago.
That's the thing. Joe Goodman of the Miami Herald told me it was $35 a couple years ago. $35 per day.
Insane. I don't know how they get away with
it. It's $45 a month for internet.
Yes.
Come on.
It didn't even work that great either. Ben Volen, friend of the show, Ben Volen for the Palm Beach Post.
Very angry.
He was struggling because like his MacBook setup was different than mine and like it wasn't working. So he called the IT guy over and the guy goes, I don't know, dude, I don't work with Macs. An IT guy.
Holy crap.
Didn't know what was going on. He goes, did you restart a computer? And I just looked at Ben, and I was trying not to laugh. Ben was furious because, right. Like, when an IT guy comes over, you're paying $17, basically, for a service.
Yeah.
You expect it to work.
Unbelievable, dude.
Not so
I
much.
I like the advice, though. Did you restart your computer?
That's what that'll fix everything.
Right. It does.
If we restarted, if we restarted this podcast, it would be better off than when we did this time. I guarantee it.
Agreed.
All right, so yeah, sure. Reggie's Kyle.
I could restart my bracket right now. All right, Reggie's Kyle.
Yeah.
I'm going to give mine something very close to my heart.
Uh-oh.
Mid-major basketball. You've seen this if you've been watching this tournament, it's really shown just how good some of these mid-major schools are. They've all made noise. They've all hung tough. I think in the Sweet 16, we have five non-major teams in there, or five or six. So they've really just done a great job, and I'm really proud of all of them.
Mm.
Good job, boys.
They're like all my kids.
Yeah. I'm kind of sticking a little bit close to mid-majors. Not exactly. My Reggie's going to upsets. It ruins everyone's bracket. Everyone gets upset that right. You know their three seed that was
upsets.
Going to Elite Eight was going was going to go to the Final Four or whatnot. But, you know, who doesn't enjoy watching the 14 knock off the 3, 13 knock off 4s? It's just fun to watch. I enjoy it. And even though it ruins everyone's brackets, way to go, upsets.
Well, I want everyone to know, even though I did lose Vanderbilt.
I was going
to
say, you get upset
the
about
four
it.
4 hours. But pretty much the whole tournament, I've been rooting for all the. I rooted for St. Mary's and for Northern Iowa the whole time. You can ask anyone in my house, even though I had both those teams in the championship game, because I just like good basketball and I love these upsets. If you don't like upsets, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
No, yeah. And even more important is I was tired, sick and tired of chalk winning the last, 3 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And it was just getting so predictable and kind of boring. And I'm glad that, you know, the upsets came in and just wrecked havoc on this tournament.
Mm. All right, well, I'm going to give my Reggie to it's kind of ironic because this team caused me to have nothing to do for a couple days there in Oklahoma City. BYU, and especially Jimmer Fredette. Jimmer is a treasure of America at this point. He scored 37 points against Florida, and he wasn't shooting that great from the outside. He was getting in the lane, just making ridiculous scoop layups. I was very impressed by him. And then he played 46 minutes, came out and played 36, and the team's lost to Kansas State. He's a workhorse. He's a great player. I think he's a 6'2" white guy, which obviously hurts his chances. I think he has to be an NBA guy, right?
What I'm reading is no, but I don't see why he couldn't make it as a point guard.
Yeah.
Like, he definitely can't do it as a two, but I think he has enough skills. I don't know. I say he doesn't get drafted, but he'll be around.
Okay.
You'll see him around. Maybe he gets picked up afterwards, makes a camp, does that kind of thing. So.
He's a junior this year, so I think he comes back next year.
Right.
Maybe, like
you
said, if they
back.
Focus on him at point guard, he could potentially do it.
Right.
But also, to the rest of BYU, I got a chance to go into their open locker room. They're just a very happy group of people, a very nice group of guys. I talked, me and Jeremy Fowler from the Orlando Sentinel talked to Noah Hartsock before the game Thursday. Truth be told, I really didn't have a great idea of who he was. I knew Hartsock. I didn't know, you know, his stats and everything. But he couldn't have been happier to have anyone talk to him at that point. He just looked, he just thrilled. He was beaming at the fact that anybody was talking to him.
Just like Florida's football team.
Exactly. They love it. Exactly. They're there to help you.
The game we came up with where it's a competition, they can try and avoid us, but if we get to tag them or touch them, we get to talk to them.
Hmm.
So that everyone enjoys actually working with the media. Coming off the practice field.
Hmm.
They can get by us without getting touched. They're good. They don't have to talk.
Hmm. I also talked to Jimmer after that, and I made a hasty comparison. I called him part Elijah Wood, part Tim Tebow.
What? So weird.
Welcome
ahead,
here.
Back that up.
He looks a little bit like Frodo from Lord of the Rings. He looks
yeah,
a little
I'll
bit like, you know, and
right.
Tebow, he's a soft-spoken, like, very kind-hearted, good guy, and one of the stories he was telling, he's playing basketball in prison leagues.
Oh, my God.
He was going into the prisons, and he played basketball. Granted, it was also to toughen him up, his brother said, but still, he's playing in prisons. BYU is like a, you know, it's a religious school.
Okay,
it was religious.
I like the idea that he was playing in prison leagues because he was in prison. But I guess your story's a little better.
Also, while I'm on the BYU train here, the prettiest cheerleaders in the regional. I'm gonna just say it.
Was Ben Bolin going nuts over the cheerleaders?
I don't know.
Was he picking up the ugly ones again?
BYU, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's end on a bad note. I'm going to throw Kyle Jackson, an additional Kyle Jackson, at the announcers
Ooh, really?
Of the BYU-UF game. I don't know who it was, I think, but it was awful. One of the things they said, they were talking about Jimmer Fredette and his brother, who was in attendance, his older brother, who also played at BYU.
A rapper?
Who, what?
You haven't heard the rap song TJ Fredette did for Jimmer?
No.
It's called Amazing.
Oh, my. I'm going to have to check
we're
that out.
Yeah, we're listening to this
anyway.
After.
But apparently, like, Jimmer gives his brother, like, all the credit in the world for, like, developing him into a player, making everything he wants. So one of the stories the announcer told was his older brother, TJ, used to take him into the gym and make him dribble the ball up and down a dark hallway, and he would jump out and scare him. And that was the whole story. That somehow
I like the idea that player. It wasn't even, like, recently he was doing this when, like, Jimmer was, like, 5 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Just jumping out of it and scaring
this,
him.
This helped develop him into the giant killing
I'm sure he's
assassin
like,
that he is now.
I'm sure he's just paranoid. He's, like, always going to watch his back now.
Jimmer can never go down a dark hallway again.
And then we also got a standard accidental, like, I don't know the teams. I'm going to put my foot in my mouth by the announcers. When Jimmer Fredette, like, they must have switched on the screen and Dan Werner was guarding him for a second. And the announcers go... And now Florida's best defender, Dan Werner, on Jimmer Fredette. And I almost lost my crap there.
I got bad news for you. That was not off the screen. That was intentional. Yeah, Kenny Boynton and Ray, it was when Parsons was playing the two and Dan Warner was at the three, and I was like, oh, here we go, here we go. Warner on Fredette, and Dan Warner somehow calls a turnover. I couldn't explain it. But yeah, I want
to. U.S. best defender. Right,
I want to go back and listen to the broadcast of all the games I was at, because I feel like they're all just horribly, like, fact error written. Like, Dan Warner's a fifth year senior.
Right, yeah.
Like, Kenny Boynton's a great shooter. All these, like, horrible mistakes.
Cliff Richard is still on the team.
Cliff Richard still hanging around. But yeah, that wraps it up for this show. We'll be back Thursday or Friday with what should be an eventful spring practice / football show. God help us. God help you. Look forward to it on Friday. Send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. And thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry.